Wing out the gimp.
Think the gimp's sleeping.
Well, I guess you just have to go wake him up now, won't you?
And welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm not unwell, thank you.
And also joining us is Jen Wicked. How are you today, Jen?
Tired, but good.
Wow, Joe doesn't have a story. Jen doesn't have a story. Good night, everybody.
Well, I could have a story if you want a story.
We always want stories. That's what we're all about.
It is? I thought we were about comics.
Well, comics have stories in them.
Oh, I see.
So, since Joe doesn't have a story, Jin, do you have a story?
Well, I can tell you what I did last night.
Well, that would be great.
I went to the St. Paul Cathedral for Easter.
And what?
I know, right? I don't know what's happening to me.
Did they have good music?
They did.
Did they make you eat the bread and drink the grape juice?
No, you know, I was respectful. I didn't participate in that.
When I take the resident of the group home to church, every time, you know, they especially come over to them because many of them are in wheelchairs or have walkers and stuff. And when they get to me, you know, the pastor is the one who says the stuff, and then the two helpers are the ones who hand stuff out. And I always am trying to find a way to kind of wave them off without seeming like, hey, no, leave it. So I've developed this kind of little just wave of the hand to kind of, nope, on to the next. Now, Catholic churches.
Yeah, Catholics, you get up and you actually walk up there, so it's easy to just stay seated and
not
participate.
Now, was this the long Catholic service or the abridged for tourists?
I don't think it was for tourists. It was about an hour long. Is that long?
Now, see, if you go downtown to the little French church, they have half-hour masses because that's where my dad goes all the time because he likes to, you know, keep it short and sweet.
The one that I take the residents to when I work on Saturday nights, one of the reasons I don't work Saturday nights, it is a little over 2 hours long.
Oh, wow. No, it was about an hour, and they had four or five masses, I guess, on Sundays. So, you know, I imagine it, if they were 2 hours a pop, those guys would be pretty tired.
No, that would be the Saturday one. The Easter Vigil is the one that's 2 hours.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, they said something about that.
I have been to those. I actually went to a Catholic wedding once, and I timed it, and it was almost 3 hours long.
Wow. Really? Mine was an hour.
Well, you hadn't done as much as this person, I guess. I don't know. See, I was raised Methodist, and our services last exactly as long as it takes for the coffee to get done, because my grandmother would be the one who would start the coffee, and she was also the one who would play the piano, and if the pastor was going too long, you know how when you watch the Oscars and the person's been talking too long, they start the music to play them off? She would, at exactly 10 till 11, start to play the procedural to wrap it up, buddy. Wrap it up.
Well,
but we will get to my Easter story later. We got a book to review.
We do?
Yes. Joe, did you read the book that we got to review?
I did.
And I did as well. By Jin's reaction, I take it she did not.
I've been busy. I forgot.
Well,
she's got things to do. She's an important person.
That's right. And we'll get into some of those things that she did because they're artsy-related stuff.
They are?
And comic-related stuff.
They are?
Yes.
Okay.
See, I pay attention.
I pay with
I'm
cash.
The host.
I pay with cash.
I'm the host.
I'm the host.
We'll get into that, too.
No.
We got a book called Don't Mess With Us or Don't Mess With US. It's a little hard to tell. And we were asked to review it. I'm going to bring up the email here so I can give the name of the gentleman who asked. Hello, my name is Bobby B. Smith. I am the comic book writer creator of the comic book series Don't Mess With Us. I am writing today for a review of my comic on your podcast. Don't Mess With Us is an action-packed sci-fi that blends four different storylines after an alien invasion starts creating chaos around the world. The four storylines offer four different perspectives of the invasion that will come together at the end of the four-issue series. Each issue will be released on a quarterly basis, with the first one available through Kickstarter March 25th, so last week, then on Geek Smitty March 1st, I think the date's wrong there, and he sent us a copy. Joe, did you read through it?
I did.
And what was your opinion?
I thought it was a pretty easy read. The panels flowed smoothly. The characters were drawn distinctly. As you know, that's always something I complain about. So you had no problem telling who's who. As the characters were introduced, you also didn't have any real trouble trying to figure out who they were. The story basically is aliens attack. And we go from person to groups of people. There seem to be four distinct groups and their reaction to the invasion. Part of me thought, you know, you could have just easily said zombies, but, you know, either way, aliens, zombies, it's all good. Not too bad reading. I mean, this obviously seems to be almost like somebody's first work. It's almost like I walk in through, like, a con, like the MSP Comic Con 2016, May 14th and 15th, at the Minnesota State Grandstand. And of course, you can go to www.mcbacomiccons.com and get advanced tickets right now.
Everybody's kind of sedated tonight.
Yeah. Well, I'm drinking, so I can't let you have all the fun.
I'm just tired.
Well, I'm drinking too, but I'm drinking DayQuil and NyQuil.
But I expect I'd be like walking by and this would be the comic book that this creator would have to sell to me. It says part one of four, so I'm assuming it's going to be a four-issue series. Now, you said he's doing this as Kickstarter, or?
Yes, the first issue is available on Kickstarter.
And what's that second thing you said?
That it will be also available on geekysmitty.com.
I'm not familiar with that. Is that his website, or is that?
It looks that way, yes.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, this is something like, if it was like $2, $3, maybe even $4, I might even drop my money on it. You know, just kind of support the local guy. And it, when I got to the end of it, as you know, it's part one of four, it did make me want to see what's happening with the next couple of issues. And the fact that it's a mini-series, in other words, I'm not committing to an ongoing, never-ending series, made me want to jump in and, you know, possibly support this artist and his endeavors. You can just jump in whenever you want. I'm drinking here.
Oh my God. 242 episodes, and I still haven't trained him on how to properly transition from one person to the other. We're coming up on episode 250. Do you think we could be professional by then?
No.
Yeah.
Fine.
I think we're just damn glad to have Jen with us. I mean, she's really invigorated me.
I'm always happy that Jen is with us. But this, to me, this podcast...
Matter of fact, this hard cider gin, this is for you.
What are you drinking?
Angry Orchard hard cider.
Do you have woodchuck here?
I don't know.
It's made in Vermont, but we could get it in Texas.
It's possible.
Woodchuck is way better than Angry Orchard.
I think I just bought this because it was cheap, and we were going to like a getaway a couple weekends ago. And when I think someone's going to raid my liquor, I don't bring the expensive stuff.
Well, Woodchuck's not expensive. It's just a different brand.
I have to write that down, Woodchuck.
The fall, if you can get it, the fall stuff is amazing. It's kind of spiced cider.
Corey, what do you think about this comic book?
Why, thank you, Joe! Like Joe said, this really felt like someone's first attempt. And in that, if it is their first attempt at a comic, the art was more animation based. And while I have some issues with parts of it, whenever there were interior sequences, the backgrounds just were flat or non-existent. The aliens seem more like he watched a movie about, well, the aliens look like that he watched a movie from the 50s and just drew the regular, you know, the bug-eyed monsters. None of the characters really popped out at me as very interesting, and the rich guy with the Iron Man suit, I didn't get. It felt really like someone's first attempt, and in that way, it's okay. The art has some problems for me in that the artist doesn't quite know how to draw people with proper perspective. Some of the people are just, in some drawings, they're only two heads high, and in some, they're six or seven heads high.
Wait, what?
Yes. And for me, that was disconcerting. I had problems with that. There was also the alien invasion just seems like something there. It's like, oh, there are evil aliens that are showing up and destroying stuff. And I didn't really get a sense of, I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. It seems like he wanted the sense that the world is in danger, and yet when you read the story, it doesn't feel that way. It just feels like there are these little pockets of things going on for the four character groups he's chosen to have something to fight. So, as a first effort, I thought it was okay. But as I'm reading it, it also very much feels like a first effort. Joe, buy, borrow, or ignore?
I think I would buy it.
For me, there wasn't anything here that jumped out at me that made me think, wow, I really want to see where this is going. So, because there's just so much out there, I would probably ignore it. And Jin did ignore it, so. But Jin has been out doing stuff and has joined a conspiracy.
I didn't ignore it on purpose. I don't know if I just missed your message or what, so. Comic guy, don't get your feelings hurt. I somehow missed the memo, or I've been busy or asleep. I'm not sure.
It was a couple weeks ago, because we missed last week. The dreaded deadline doom. Well, no, that was 2 weeks ago, and then you had to work late last week, so this was actually 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I've been super busy. I don't even know if I'm coming or going no more.
But you joined a conspiracy.
Oh, yeah. I went and met up with some guys and drew some comics.
Now, this cartoonist conspiracy is something that I've heard about for a while. Do you know much about how big it is, or did you just go to the one meeting?
I really don't know that much about it.
You tell him, remember, it is a conspiracy. You don't want to spill all the beans at once. Although, did you get a fez?
I did not.
Oh, maybe they're not doing fezes anymore.
See, Joe knows more about it than I do.
One year they brought a couch to the con. It was kind of cool. They had a little area we could just sit down and talk or read comics.
And aren't they the ones who put together the, what is that, the name of the thing, Ludafisk? What was that?
I have no idea. Cartoonist Conspiracy is a comic jam, basically. So a bunch of people sit around and they come up with a subject and everybody, you know, does some panels, does some pages of the comic, and then they kind of put it together. And I'm really not good at writing on the fly, so I ended up just doing the cover.
Cool.
So they have meetups in St. Paul. There's meetups in Minneapolis. You know, you don't have to be professional or anything to participate. There, you know, some people are students, some people are, you know, kind of more practicing like I am, and there's just different types. It's no pressure.
And from what I've read, there are cells in other cities. I know that Seattle has one. A couple other cities have them. And they meet once a month to do this sort of jam thing. And they've been around the Twin Cities for a long time. A lot of people have kind of cycled in and out. As I said, there was one year they did a book called Cartoon Ludafisk, I think it was. And we had it at the charity table at the convention. It was just a big box full of mini comics.
Yeah, I was, I guess, recruited by somebody who had been pretty much hounding me to go since I got up here. But usually he would only give me a couple hours notice, and you can't get me to do anything on a couple of hours notice. So, you know, gradually it got to be a couple of days, and finally I think he gave me a week's notice, and I was able to, or a few days at least, and I was able to get out there. So they were trying to bring in some fresh blood. I don't know how regularly I'll be able to go do that, but it was fun. It was fun. Yeah, I don't tend to work in public a lot, so, but it doesn't bother me. I'm not bothered by people watching me draw. I had a couple of spectators off and on while I was working on my cover, but it's good. It's a good exercise to kind of finish things in a limited time frame and not overthink them and collaborate with other people.
And I will actually be going next month to the Minneapolis one and setting up to interview people who are there and kind of find out a little more about it. So that's one of the podcasts you can look forward to next month. And then you were on another podcast.
I was on Panels and Pizza.
Faithless
now,
woman.
Now, the Fancy Pants Gangsters have also been at the Minneapolis convention for a long time, doing their sort of thing. And so tell us a little about the Panels and Pizza. What's the gimmick?
Was the pizza good?
The pizza was good. So we went to Eden Pizza in St. Paul, and kind of the premise of the podcast is Adam feeds you pizza. And, you know, we sat and just kind of talked just about, you know, everything and getting to know each other while we ate, which kind of breaks the ice. So, you know, you're already pretty chatty by the time he actually starts recording. And he, you know, and I it was a good interview, I thought. He asked me a lot of stuff that normally I don't get asked about. He had pretty well prepared notes and everything. So he interviews comic artists and creators around the Twin Cities. So it's a local podcast because he actually sits down with you. It's not over Skype, you know, the way this is recorded and many podcasts are recorded. So we ate at Eden Pizza in St. Paul and it was delicious. It was very similar to one of my favorite pizza places back in Houston. So I was quite pleased to find the pizza. And also Joe, he did agree with me that, you know, the plain cheese pizza is the foundation of all good pizzas and the metric by which pizzas should be judged, not excessive toppings.
Boring.
Oh,
never get away with that shit in New York or Chicago.
We're not in New York or Chicago.
Never will be with that attitude.
We're in the Midwest.
Hey, don't ever say anything bad about a Chicago pizza. I was born and raised on those. They are amazing. But I also know that they do frighten and intimidate a lot of people. To the point where when I was in Chicago and I bought one, the person I was in Chicago with looked at it and said, "That's a casserole and not a pizza."
Yeah, I'm not really into the extra deep dish style pizza. This was a very thin crust pizza. It was... the cheese was good. Adam told the cook to surprise us, so he kind of mixed some different cheeses in there. But what I really like is the thin crust pizza, that it's kind of soft on top, but then it has that nice kind of crunch on the very bottom where it's touched the pan. And so in that regard, it was perfect. It wasn't too dry. It wasn't too cracker-like. It just had just the right amount of snap. So...
Joe, what have you been up to for the last week while Jin's been out being creative and being all interviewed and being a hot, cool artist?
I am up to 30 pounds of lifting at the work. Still recovering from my back injury from about a month or so ago. And that's kind of why I'm slow today, because my neck has just been killing me. Just, yeah, I can't move left to right, which works out good when you got a microphone in front of you, because you don't want to be like over here talking or going way over here talking. And I thought rather than have painkillers, I would just drink, because I've been taking painkillers all day and they haven't done shit.
That sounds like a good plan.
So you're going to take painkillers all day and drink all night?
Why not? Although I did.
Yeah.
I was rock and roll all night.
Oh.
Party every day. Now I party every other day. Now I'm lucky if I party once a year. Thanks, Corey. I did get outside, though. I mean, it was 60, almost 70 degrees outside. I walked Lake Como over where I used to live. It's about a mile around. Figured maybe in between painkillers and drinking, a little exercise might help. It didn't. But it was good to get out anyways. Get my vitamin D.
You don't just take that in pill form?
No.
You go outside?
Well, now, you got to remember, you know.
You're a comic book fan and you go outside?
I've got diabetes. I've got rheumatoid arthritis.
He's got the beatus.
I eat my breakfast. I have a secondary breakfast of all the pills they have given me to try to remind me.
He's a hobbit.
Trying to get back
second breakfast.
To normal. And I'm to the point where I'm like, you know what? If they give me one more pill, I'm just going to refuse it. I'm just going to go like Ric Flair, ride my body to the end, leave it hard, tan, and looking good. Woo!
Don't do the whole thing Ric Flair did, because remember, he decided not to pay the IRS, not just once, but twice, and had to be bailed out.
I can't afford to have ex-wives. As it is now, I am losing major points, because even as we sit here and do this here podcast, it's my wife's birthday.
What?
She has begrudgingly let me do the podcast, mainly because, like me, birthday's not a big deal anymore. I mean, once I pass 30, I really don't care. But we did go out beforehand for the podcast and had a little dinner and had a couple beers, and then I came home and figured I'd keep my buzz going.
Well, that's good. Maybe Joe will get drunk enough we could get some secrets out of him.
No,
get
I'm
some tales from the shop that he's never shared before.
Oh, don't worry. I got something ready for you.
I'm going to get some tales from my head taking a nap on this desk.
Well, do you snore?
No.
Well, then that's not going to be very entertaining.
No, I'm sorry. He's not boring me. I'm just tired.
Well, I understand that.
Corey's being nice, because what you missed, Jen, is all last week, after he listened to your podcast with the Pizzles and Panels guy, he was ranting and raving. Jen,
we're getting there. We're getting there.
Go for it, then. I've already.
All right.
Fine. Let's go.
Fine.
Let's throw down.
Now that I've created Discord, I'm going to sit back, drink, and enjoy the game.
Oh, don't worry, Joe. You're a part of this. Now, when Jin moved here, one of the things that we kind of said to each other, both said and unsaid, is, you know, we're very close friends. We've been close friends for a long time. We're just going to kind of take care of each other. So we've kind of shared some information so that if one of us gets hit by a banana truck, the other one would be able to help.
Notice, after all these podcasts Corey and I have done, he has never once given me the information. That's
always fine. With the banana truck.
Hold on.
Uh-huh.
So I pass on the information to Jen, and she's come into the podcast, and whenever I would say that she's our special guest, much like if this were a TV show and she were a recurring guest star, special guest. I thought that was great. Oh, no. She threw a fit. Can't call her a special guest. Fine. Okay. Then
I'm a playful pal who's fun to be with.
Then my body decides that I need another trip to the hospital because it's been 5 years since I was there.
I'm a queer metal butt muncher.
So I go to the hospital, and as we're driving home, Joe and Butch give me a lecture.
How about
Joe
puking motherfuckers?
Joe gives me a lecture like none I have heard from anyone but my mother
deserve it.
About how you could have died, yep. and we wouldn't know what to do. Nope. So
all that would be left is a bronze doll.
So I hand Joe.
A bronze doll?
Gall, like gallbladder.
Oh, gotcha.
Some about the Strodes, they got weak gallbladders, I'm telling you.
So I give Joe the passwords as well.
Which I have yet to receive, but...
No, you've been given the passwords repeatedly.
Out in the ether world. Chinese must have it. They have all my information anyways.
Well, if you'd open your damn email once in a blue moon, you'd have
viruses.
It. So now, Jin has all the passwords. Joe has all the passwords. They've got the keys to the kingdom.
You notice, Jin, all signs of his cold are gone now that he's all revved up?
Oh, no. No, you trust me. You can hear the cold. So I sit down. Jin says that she's going to be on this pizza podcast.
Yeah.
She's out in the world promoting herself and kind of promoting us a little bit too, which thank you very much. I appreciate that. But as I listen to the podcast, I read the description where you are listed as the co-host.
I didn't write that. Adam did.
And then Joe, on April 1st, last week, puts out a podcast without me even knowing what's going on.
He did.
So you bastards are planning a coup d'etat, aren't you?
Anything to do with that podcast. It's something, it was a time distortion. It was some weird thing from the future. I had nothing to do with it.
And it's very clear that you two are going to try and get rid of me.
Never.
Well, I will not go quietly into that good night.
Or even into that good day.
I'm the host of the damn show, and I'm the producer, and you're trying to get rid of me.
You seem to be producing a lot of phlegm. How is it sitting around sniffing uncontrolled substances?
Fine, if you guys want to get rid of me, that's fine. It's okay. I'll just sit over here. You do the show. That's fine.
I should comment that the last comment I made about pastel puking motherfuckers, I got from Jin when I was listening to that Why Not, I think number 5.
Why me?
Oh, my God. I laughed so fucking hard.
Oh, yeah. The Thomas Kincaid thing?
I was sitting at work, and I was listening to it. I guess I was watching it, too. And you said that, and I started laughing. Now, of course, I'm in a room now. It's late at night. All the belts are stopped. Everybody's doing their own thing, and I am laughing so hard I'm crying. Oh, that was just brilliant.
So, like, I memorized that script for that video.
That was impressive. I thought you were doing it.
No. So I wrote it, and it's, like, 3 paragraphs long, and I memorized it. And I spent, like, all day practicing it to make sure that I had it memorized, and then it took me 2 hours of takes to get through the whole thing once I had the camera on, because
just
I kept
one take, yeah,
because it 2 hours of doing it over and over, because I kept either mixing words up or flubbing stuff or getting tongue-tied because some of it was a mouthful. So it's like, yeah, I can't do those every week. It's actually, like, surprisingly time consuming.
The only real complaint I have is that you didn't have any cleavage, you know, I guess you don't want to do that all the time.
No, only when it's funny.
But then again, you know, you got to look at it from our standpoint, Jin. I mean, you're cute, you're talented, you're good to listen to. Corey and I are none of those. And
but
we
you
had
know,
to work our ass off in order to get the podcast the way we are, and then for you to come in now. I mean, seriously, if Corey and I were females, all we'd have to do is just, you know, show a little, and boy, we just do 2 podcasts and we'd be paid for already. I think it's blatantly unfair that a cute woman could just come in, show a little skin. Of course, you are very talented too, and Corey and I are neither of those.
Well, I've been actually, like, pleasantly surprised, because other than, like, the newest video, the rate of, like, views, that video is actually the lowest, like, rated one, I guess, of some of the ones I've posted. So I know that some of them got posted in different places, but, you know, actually, people would apparently rather listen to be funny than just have, like, a low-cut shirt on.
If I like it, it can't
be funny, at least.
I enjoyed it.
Thank you.
All right, Corey, stop them open. Get over. Get back in the game.
Is the coup d'etat over?
It's only just begun.
Yeah, whatever. Go on.
DC finally announced all the books coming out for the rebirth.
Afterbirth?
No. Well, we're going to have three different Supermans.
Well, why not? We got two Spider-Mans, 500 X-Men teams, 300 Avengers.
And looking over the, you know, how we were, Joe and I last week were kind of excited because Jonathan Hickman, who did a bunch of stuff at Marvel, including the recent Secret Wars, a brilliant run on Fantastic Four over at Image. He's done Pax Romana and Nightly News. He was making some Twitter noise that he may be popping up over at DC, not involved in any of the books that they announced. Matter of fact, I'm looking over the creative teams, and boy, there's nobody new here. They didn't bring anybody new in except the stuff we already know. Tom King, who's currently doing one of my favorite Marvel books.
Alan
Vision,
King? I thought he died.
But died?
Tom King.
I didn't even know he was sick.
I miss the crickets.
But I'm looking over, a lot of it is, let's see, I know some people are excited about Christopher Priest.
How are you talking and posting on Facebook at the same time?
Because I posted that while you guys were shunning
me. It only says 3 minutes. Hi, Greg Osborne. Who's Greg Osborne?
He's one of the guys from the Comic Geek Speak board. Christopher Priest, who a lot of people like. I'm not as big a fan as most people, but he's going to be doing the Deathstroke book. Dan Jurgens has got a few books coming out, including Dan Jurgens is back on Superman, kind of doing the pre-52 Superman in Action Comics. Detective Comics and Action Comics have gone back to their old numbering because they're getting close to issue 1,000. But Joe, have you looked over the Rebirth stuff?
Nope.
And
I figure I don't worry about it till previews hits, which hopefully is coming sometime this week.
It's not in previews.
I mean, it will be.
No, it won't. It'll get a separate book in the middle of April. So the previews you get this week will just say, DC Rebirth is coming.
Then I won't order anything. It's all good by me.
The Harley Quinn book is still going to be by Amanda Connor and Jimmy Palmiotti. Ethan Van Sciver is back on Green Lantern. So that's, I like Ethan Van Sciver's art. But really a lot of the stuff I'm looking at and it just doesn't look much different. Although there's one book, there are two books, Joe, that I think you might find interesting. One, do you know who the artist is on Suicide Squad, which has a movie coming out, I guess, in a few months?
No.
Jim Lee.
So we'll get one issue, and then 5 months later, another issue.
Right. And there's another comic coming out. You may have heard of this title. All-Star Batman.
Wait, would you say Miss Mystic?
Oh, sorry. Batman!
All-Star Batman.
Batman!
Drawn by John Romita Jr. and written by Scott Snyder. No, it is not going to tie in with the Frank Miller, Jim Lee All-Star Batman, which is famous for a whole bunch of stuff, but probably one of the craziest lines ever uttered by Batman.
Batman!
What are you, retarded? I'm the goddamn Batman! So, there you go. There's your rebirth. The big thing, and this is what I wanted to talk to Joe about, is they're saying most of the books are going to be bi-weekly. And I think either the first 6 or 8 issues are going to be fully returnable. Joe, when you owned a shop, when they announced that a book was fully returnable, did that affect how you ordered it?
I would consider ordering them and even going a little longer. What was nice, especially with new issue launches, is I would definitely go a little heavier into them, and I would make sure I would have enough for the shelf, knowing that I could always return them if they didn't pan out. Plus, it also gave me a chance, like you said, with 8 issues and over 4 months, that would give me a chance to figure out how the line's going to sell, or if the line's going to sell.
Now, I know with Wizard, didn't they have something where you would order so many and then they would overship?
Yeah, overships were different because you never knew when they were coming. Wizard was pretty consistent with their overships. A lot of times, you know, you'd get something. I think there was a couple independents that would do a return thing. You'd be like, I didn't order this. Oh, it's returnable. Okay, put it on the shelf for a while. And then they'd always toss you a couple cents because, you know, you're paying $150 a week in UPS charges. So they divide that by however many hundreds of books you buy. So you might get like 10 cents credit. I did not mind that, I guess, either overshipped. Overshipped, the publisher controlled or Diamond controlled. When they tell you it's returnable, you control it. So what I probably would have done is taken the preview orders. And, of course, not knowing the creative teams would have been a real headache. But then I also could have said, okay, well, if I've got 50 orders for Action and they're going to give me returnability and say I used to have 70, say I know I could go, well, maybe I'll go 100. Now, what I don't know, and I know they tried this a couple times, sometimes they would say, and this, again, was way early when the variants were first coming. If you, say you went nuts. I ordered 200 knowing they'll be returnable, but then I could also get one of the 200 variants. If you returned anything, then you had to return the 200 variant. And that didn't last too long because, of course, well, what if I sold it? How are you going to enforce it? I think that was their big headache problem. And I can see that being a problem now with DC because there would be some dealers who don't naturally get the higher premiums. They might just order it just to get the premiums, knowing that they could always return it. So, I don't know how they'll do it. I do know there were some that when they had 3 different variants, you could return whatever, any variant, didn't really matter. So, yeah, there are a lot of information on the variants that could affect how a retailer might order more. But again, like I said, if I had 50 people wanting it and they're going to do it, I would probably put 50 on the shelf just to make sure I had them. Because nothing's worse than selling out of one and not being able to get it. And then 2 weeks later, and then 3s follow 2 weeks after that, and you still got 2s and 3s but no number 1s. So, yeah, if they're going to make it returnable, I would do it. When I had Hot Comics, I always scored the highest tier discount. Again, it was by volume, how much you ordered. At Crazy Comics, if I had had something like that, I know sometimes I would order more knowing, well, if I order 100 more, even though I'll probably never sell them, knowing that they're returnable, that'll knock an extra percentage off my total order discount. So there are other variables in play. But yeah, no, I'd balls to the wall, man. Just order and return them if you can't have them.
And one of the things that a lot of people don't know about the comics industry is your discount is based on the size of your order. The
and
bigger
I had a
your
big
order,
if you know what I'm saying. I'm sorry, it's Angry Orchard talking.
And the bigger your order, the more your discount. So a place like The Source, which is probably the biggest comic shop in the Twin Cities at this point, they will get a bigger discount than, say, what's a little shop that opened near you, Joe?
Oh, like High Class.
Yeah. High Class that doesn't order a whole lot. Their discount's going to be the minimum number. And in that minimum number, they're not going to get as big a discount, so they're not going to have as much profit per book. Which actually makes it harder for them, because if you're getting less profit per book, you have to order closer to what you think you can sell.
I think Marvel and DC, at least as I was selling Hot Comics, and even when I had Crazy Comics, they went a lot. If they had a high-profile project they wanted, they would always make the books returnable. And that's where you start hearing criticisms, you know. Well, you can get this discount if you order X amount of these books that have nothing to do with a book and blah, blah, blah. So they started to make it real convoluted instead of making it simple. But if they were willing to put the money, I guess their money where their mouth is, I would take them up on that 9 times out of 10. But what they really should be doing is giving that returnability to some of the smaller tier books. I mean, Jim Lee on a book, yeah, people are going to order crazily to get that book. If it's returnable, that's even better. But when you start getting some of the smaller tier titles, and I guess DC isn't even doing that. It sounds like they're grouping their titles around Justice League, Batman, Superman, and we might not see smaller titles like Marvel's been popping out.
And I think with the biweekly, you're going to see a lot more of that because DC is kind of concentrating on what sells rather than expanding. And you really can't blame them for that. You know, there are some characters they're trying. Deathstroke isn't exactly a book that's ever sold really well, but they're going to try it again. But I don't see them doing like they did with the New 52 where, okay, here's a Creature Commandos book. Here's a Weird War Tales book. Here's I, Vampire. I don't think they're going to do that because they tried it and nobody bought those. As good as they were, they just didn't sell. People want their Batman. They want their Justice League. They kind of want their Superman. And they want the books that are tied in with that. And Marvel's doing the same thing with, you know, I counted up in the next previews, there are 8 Spider-Man books. 8 Spider-Man books. With 2 of them being twice monthly. So you want to follow what's going on in all the Spider-Man books, you're going to have to spend $40 a month. Which is crazy talk. I think that has more to do with what's selling and what's not selling. It's, oh, let's see, I want to read Spider-Man. Oh, well, I got to buy 2 Amazing Spider-Man. That's $8. And then I want to read, you know, the Spider-Gwen and Silk and Spider-Woman. And well, there's $40 a month. That's a lot of money to lay out just to follow a story. And if you saw the Civil War II tie-ins, boy, that's going to hurt your wallet. That's not going to be pretty. The first comic I remember them doing overship on was Sandman number 8. Joe, do you remember what Sandman number 8 was?
That was the introduction of Death.
Yep. And even though it was overshipped, it still became, at one point, I know it was worth more than Sandman number 1 was. And in a lot of ways, Neil Gaiman said that the overship is what got people's attention and saved the book, which is why they did overshipping on and on and on. Were there any books that you remember other than Wizard being overshipped that got your attention?
Not really. I mean, usually what I recall is when it came time to return a lot of these overship, didn't really have a lot of them left. I don't think there was many that I could say a wholesale returned. Again, you know, I talked about all these different things, but when I had Hot Comics, there weren't a lot of variants. And I already had a top discount, so, you know, the things I was talking about didn't really apply to what I was doing. I was always pleasantly surprised to find, you know, when a book was returnable like that, but I never really, I don't think a book made it or broke doing it that way.
And we'll talk more about DC Rebirth as it gets closer, and also we'll talk more about Civil War II as it gets closer. But anything, Joe, you said you had a tale from the shop of some kind you wanted to bring up?
I don't know if this is a tales from the shop or maybe a regret from the shops.
Uh-oh, should I get the sad music?
No, it's not sad. It's just, okay. It's just the top 5 things I never did in my shop that I always wanted to. And this is Hot Comics, the big store, not really the smaller one. And I see through my alcohol-hazed eyes that there's only four, so we're going to leave number five for a future choice.
Which means we'll never get
to it. We'll never get to it, no.
Yeah.
Well, no, as I go through the memory on Facebook and the old podcast pop-up, I give a listen to, and if there's something we need to address, I will address it, with the exception of those Spider-Man issues that I never read. The video rentals is something that I know we talked about and never did. Now it seems quaint and outdated, but back then video rentals were big. Blockbuster was a huge force in video industry. From the beginning of Hot Comics in 92 to the end in 2001 when I owned it, videos overwent a tremendous transformation. It started out where the only way you could get a hold of a VHS to watch was to go to a rental facility, because to buy it was like 70, 80 bucks. And one of the first tapes, I think, to start breaking that, I believe, was E.T., wasn't it? Where it was 20 bucks.
I remember E.T. was one. When I worked at a video store, you had your big Blockbusters. The first one I remember was Purple Rain, came out at $30, because yes. I was working at a video store at the time, and I was a huge fan of Purple Rain. Still am. I still think it's one of the most fun rock musicals, and I still watch it about every year or so. We won't talk about the fact that one of the reasons I moved to Minneapolis was because I loved that movie so much. But when it came out, it was $30, and the video store I worked at was a little hole in the wall. It was just some guy who owned some videotapes, and he would get maybe one or two of the big movies, and it was almost like this is his video collection. And like all video stores at the time, he had a back room, and that's where all the profit was made. But we put up a sign that if you wanted to buy Purple Rain and you prepaid, I think it was 25 bucks, the day it came out, you could get a copy. And again, you know, this was early in home video. We sold about 30 or 40 of those, which was unheard of for a shop this small. And then by the time I moved to Minneapolis, I worked in a video store when I first got here. You had, you know, Top Gun came out and Star Trek. All the Star Trek movies would come out at a sell-through price. And then by the 90s, there would be, these movies are coming out as a sell-through price, and these are coming out as a rental price.
Yeah, we had a...
Then by the time you got to DVDs, they all came out at the same price.
We had a magazine we got, Video Update, I think it was. And we used to follow along with that. And anyways, halfway through Hot Comics, we thought it would be nice to get video rentals, especially when we got a hold of certain... I'm trying to think of what you'd call them.
Obscure?
Yeah, titles. Not necessarily... I can't even think of anything because everything's so available now. But it could even be something like The Crow, Brandon Lee's Crow, when it first came out. Things like that.
We got the Sinister Cinema catalog that I turned you on to,
yeah,
which had a bunch of odd, obscure public domain stuff that you're not going to find anywhere because it's really odd and obscure. They focus mostly on science fiction and horror from the 40s, 50s, and into the 60s. And I purchased their drive-in double features still to this day. But they had a bunch of stuff that, you know, back then the comic book fans were also the guys who wanted to watch the 50s horror movies. You know, them and Invasion of the B-Girls and all the Ed Wood stuff.
So we never really did that. Part of it was just doing the comics were just way too much time to begin with. And had we actually computerized the store, which was, actually, I think that was the one I was missing, computerizing the store. We probably would have done that because we could have had a module that would have taken care of rentals and things like that. So we never did video rentals. Close on that, we never did video games. I'm not talking Nintendo. I'm talking standalone, toss a quarter and play with it things.
Didn't the original Hot Comics have those, though?
No, they had one. They had the X-Men game when it first came out, because the guy who owned it brought it in and said, hey, will split the profits with you. And it was a four-player game, and it was a quarter eater, so to get to the end, you just kept throwing quarters in it because the game got progressively harder and harder to play. And they played with it until, I don't know how long they had it, if maybe 4 months, 6 months, and then the guys pulled it out because they said, well, okay, we're noticing the sales are dropping or the amount of money we're taking because obviously everybody had played it. And, of course, once I played it all the way to the end with whoever I was playing with, yeah, I was done with. They were going to think about bringing in the Avengers game, but it never happened. So part of the plan I had, especially when I went into the big store, the back wall, which eventually became the graphic novel wall, which became probably wildly more profitable than video games ever would have been a row of video games. And I would have either had them bought, I had friends who had them, they would have just brought them up, and they were places that I was semi-formal with that I probably could have, you know, arranged to have some games come in. Problems were, first of all, City of St. Paul had an ordinance about how many video games you could have on a premise before you had to have a special license and special investigative units and whatever. And a lot of that was geared towards the 80s when you used to have halls filled with video games. And all those places had kind of died out, but, of course, a good law remained and just sat there and kind of got rid of that. So I had to say, well, I could do five, but in order to make the electrical work I would need to be able to run these things worthwhile, I would need 10, but I don't want to pay the $2,000 license to do it. There was just so many things to go through. But like I said, we started going into graphic novels, and then the video games just kind of went by the wayside. We didn't even bother bringing any in. Number three was, much like the video rentals, we were thinking about a library rental for graphic novels because there were a lot of people that were interested in just reading a graphic novel, but they didn't want to buy it. And I was thinking, well, you know, if you did that the way you did video rentals, you know, I mean, we weren't a library, and back then libraries didn't have graphic novel sections. Now they do. You want to read for Cerebus? Sure. It's, $2 for the week. And then if you don't bring it back next week, another $2 or whatever. You know, figure out what it was. Again, it was just a task. We just couldn't figure out how to work around it logistically. I mean, what happens if the guy loses it? What if he brings it back damaged? What if he never brings it back? You know, you're going to tell a guy who buys, you know, $50-$60 a week, well, you're cut off because you didn't return my graphic novel. So just a headache. Number two, which I kind of alluded to, we never did a computerized system. There were computerized systems available. They were very expensive. They were very cumbersome. I think Diamond had one that they went with, and then there was a couple other places. What made it weird was that the UPC codes on comic books had 15 numbers, where I think on normal UPCs they're 12. Those extra numbers were issue and there might have been one other thing. So it was like issue number, you know, stuff that Cub Foods doesn't care about. Comic book. I want to know, I sold Amazing Spider-Man 15 and how many of them. Nowadays,
you sold an Amazing Spider-Man 15?
I know. Well, actually, I think...
Oh, wait. They've done a lot of Amazing Spider-Man's 15 now.
So, nowadays, there's actual software. I mean, even the smallest stores has software. And I love looking at the receipts as kind of an ex-retailer because it... You know, what came up, comic book, which is usually the back issues versus the new issues, which they track a lot closer because, like we've talked about in the past, that was probably 80 to 90% of your sale through. And number one thing I never did that I wish I could have done more, I wish we'd have done more signings, more, you know, store appearances. We've talked about the ones we did. I mean, we had Colleen Doran, Pete Krause, Alex Hyde-White, when the FF movie that Corman did come out. We talked just recently about Scott Liddell and his visit. What I found out, my store really wasn't a signing store because every one of these signings had very sparse turnouts. You know, nowadays it might have been a little easier because you got social media, you had email. You know, I got by on the hotline that we did with our extra line in the shop. Word of mouth, flyers. There wasn't really a central place you could post, hey, I'm having Jin Wicked in for her only St. Paul appearance. But,
huh?
See, and she didn't even show up. That's how hard it was to get people to show up to comic signings. So I didn't do more signings. I see the source do them. And, you know, even I got to admit, you know, sometimes they're big, they're heavy, they're hot. Sometimes I walk in and I almost feel bad because here's the creator sitting there and there's nobody in the store and there's nobody at his table. But that's just the way they work. And the ones we did were pretty fine. I mean, Colleen Doran,
she was a lot of fun.
Yeah, she was fun. I remember she came in and I made a deal and I said, well, here's how I want to do it. You give away your comic book and then I will pay you for whatever it is you gave away. Because I want people to get exposed to your comic book. I just want you to sell them. If you go to my Facebook page, I have a lot of pictures with her doing that. B. Krause was a longtime friend. Actually, I think when we did our little interviews back at FallCon, I talked with Pete briefly, and you know, I actually met him when he was working on Entropy Tales with I can't remember who else was involved with that. But they came in, and when he was on Power of Shazam, he came in. Alex Hyde White and Scott Lodell were just something that outside agencies contacted us, and you know, Big Mike did the Scott Lodell signing, and Alex Hyde White came along, you know, whatever. They were what they were. They were nothing big. Nowadays, I think it might be a different ball game because you actually have people that you could, you know, use social media, word of mouth, things like that. I mean, if Pete Krause was going to be at a signing, he might promote it on his Facebook page or whatever. So
the other thing that I've noticed with the source is they have local creators there a lot. And there are a lot of local creators there. I know you and I went for Keiju Max.
Yeah.
And I know Xander Cannon's been over there more than once.
Yeah, he was just there for his the world release of his graphic novel of Keiju Max.
Yep. And there's a lot of indie creators who go there who may not even have a book. They may just have mini comics. But what Nick used to do is, hey, why don't you set up here on a Wednesday? It's our busiest day. You could sell your mini comics. You could get people to know your stuff. I know that Uptown Girl, I have so much trouble remembering his name other than Bob. But he goes around just taking his mini comics to all the shops and works out a deal with them individually. And what Nick used to do is, well, when a new issue comes out, just set up on a Wednesday. You know, set up, we got the table, you sell them here. And then leave a bunch of them for us to sell. And when he would do his collections, he'd take them over. I know that one of the shops in San Francisco that I really, if I ever get to San Francisco, I got to visit it. It's called Isotope Comics. They have the local creators there all the time. Like whenever a new book comes out that they're involved in, they'll just show up and do signings the day it comes out to help promote the book. It helps the shop, but it also helps the creator. And even the creator will bring in, because if you work for DC or Marvel or IDW or Dark Horse or any of the bigger publishers, they'll just send you a bunch of the comic you worked on for you to sign and sell. I mean, Terrence Greep, also known as Spider Baby, still has issues of Scooby-Doo that were sent to him that he sells at the conventions. So it really helps the creators and the shops, because in a lot of ways it makes the people coming in to buy books feel more connected to the comic book that they're buying. I think when you know the person who's doing the comic, you're going to buy it more often. And I always point to Brian Wilson, who would talk about how he would buy a book by a creator, even if he wasn't interested in it when it first came out, because he'd met the guy and he liked the guy and he wanted to support him and read his work. And I think it's like that for a lot of comics where, I know for me, there are some comic creators who I may not be huge fans of their work, but they're great people. So I'm going to buy their stuff because I support them and I want them to make a good living at what they're doing. And more, your mid-level and lower-level creators are doing that because they're learning that when you sell stuff by hand and you're kind and personable and make that connection, that fan is going to talk about you more on social media, and social media is where all the advertising is going now. There's no wizard. There's no comic buyer's guide. Nobody looks at the ads on websites. It's social media and word of mouth that how comics can build. And I just want to point to Ms. Marvel. Ms. Marvel came out, the first issue did mediocre, and then it dropped. But as social media grabbed a hold of it, first the digital sales shot up, then the trade sales shot up, and now the regular monthly comic sales are starting to go up to the point where the writer on that book is appearing on NBC talk shows. She was on the Seth Meyers show. Think about that, Joe. When you were a kid, would you have even imagined that even the top comic creator would be on Johnny Carson? And here's a person whose book's selling, 30,000 copies, showing up on The Late Show with Seth Meyers.
Well, Rob Liefeld showed up on the show.
On Dennis Miller, where Dennis Miller kind of accidentally accused him of plagiarism.
Yeah, he went along with it.
Well, because what are you going to do? Dennis Miller's looking through the book and says, hey, is that the thing? No, it's Bad Rock, completely different character, nothing like the thing. You know who else is completely different, Joe?
These guys.
Our sponsors.
Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly. And your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right, those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors.
Your enthusiasm has destroyed my voice.
My drink is gone.
After we do the ads, we talk about what you're doing on the eBays. So, Joe, what are you doing on the eBays?
Not a lot. But I did want to take some time to talk about the MSP Comic-Con 2016. It's coming, They have over 250 guest creators, one of them who's snickering on the other end of the phone line here.
Hello.
A huge variety of comics and collectibles. Lots of dealers from all over the country. The grab bags are coming back. 500 on Saturday, 250 on Sunday. The Troll Lords creative team will be having their 30th anniversary. Again, mark this on your calendar because we've been pimping this since it was called SpringCon. May 14th and 15th, Minnesota State Fairgrounds in the Grandstand. 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday. Advance tickets on sale at www.mcbacomiccons.com. And if you go there, you'll also see they have a number of fun things for sale as well. They have a Minions Assembled t-shirt ready to go. How would you, how one of the big things we always talk about when the con shows come is you got to have a nice bag or something to carry your comics with? Why don't you buy yourself an MCBA tote bag?
Whoa, they got tote bags.
Or a drawstring bag.
We're as good as NPR now.
They have an commemorative pin that you can check out, and a thing that I'll probably get, the MCBA Harley Quinn pint glass.
You need more drink.
I do, because my Batman glass is tragically empty. So if you head on over there, you can pick up all this stuff, pre-order the fun swag. They'll have it ready for you at the show. And, of course, we always talk about how the advance tickets will get you in a lot quicker than the regular tickets. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, you know, Corey and I, we always talk that we're doing the MCBA charity garage sale. And, of course, the fun thing is you never know what you're going to find there. Comic books, crew socks, you know, whatever.
Slap chops. Whatever we had slap chops.
Corey focuses on and obsesses on. You know, we are accepting donations for stuff, things that you would probably just not even think you need anymore. Just bring it on in. You can either contact me ahead of time to drop off or just bring it to the show and we'll put it down and we do it all for charity. This year we've got a new charity. We know we do the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, the Minnesota Lupus Foundation. But this year they've got the Bikers Against Child Abuse.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's an organization that exists with the intent to create a safer environment for abused children. And reading off their mission statement, they say, "We exist as a body of bikers to empower children not to feel afraid of the world in which they live. We stand ready to lend support to our wounded friends by involving them with an established united organization. They work in conjunction with local and state officials who are already in place to protect children." The local chapter, of course, is called Bikers Against Child Abuse Minnesota, and they will be one of the chosen charities who will get a piece of the action we'll be doing at the charity garage sale, as well as the original art and unique collectibles charity auction. So you can go have some fun and feel good. You're helping good charities at the same time.
And Joe and I are going to be podcasting the entire time. We're not going to be doing video podcasting. Although,
I have to go get gas.
There may be some periscoping going on, so I'm going to be testing out the periscope again very soon. I know when we were at the Geek Expo, I did some periscoping, and people really enjoyed that.
Which is really cool, because Butch went one way, I went the other.
Yes! And the periscoping, now that I've upgraded my phone, I'm going to be actually able to record whatever we periscope, and it'll go up on our YouTube channel. Joe, we're just becoming multimedia mavens here.
Yeah.
We're learning more about the interwebs.
And if you really want to help me out, just go to Crazy, K-R-A-Y-Z, and buy something off of eBay. Let me know it's one of our vast listeners, and I'll toss in something from our vast accumulation of crap. It could be, not a half-used thing of Carmex, but it could be this empty Batman glass that I was drinking hard cider from. Or it could be, I don't know, here's a copy of Avengers vs. X-Men signed by John Romita. The senior, why he signed the senior, I have no freaking idea, because Junior did the cover. Anyways, I got all sorts of stuff to give away. Some of it I'll be donating to the charity art auction or the charity booth that we're working. Other stuff just shows up on eBay. Matter of fact, I found a box of toys I haven't opened since I closed Hot Comics way back in 2001. So that stuff will be posted by the time you listen to the podcast. So jump on over, check it out.
And no questions for Ask the Strode?
No, that was people were responding that you kind of a know-it-all and they're getting tired of it.
Matter of fact, over on Panels and Pizzas, somebody said that I have a frightening amount of comic book knowledge in my head.
Yes.
So I don't know how to take that. And since she's kind of wandered off or maybe fallen asleep, I can't get an explanation for it.
Sorry, I'm not feeling well.
I suppose, have you been drinking?
No.
Maybe you should.
Maybe I should.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, next week, you and me, drinking contest. I mean, I'll already concede you're going to win, but nevertheless.
That might not be a good idea.
Yeah, probably not. I don't have to work. I go into massage on Tuesday morning.
I'm not going to tell any jokes about that.
It's workers' comp, so there's not much to joke about. Okay, Corey, you want to ask the Strode? I'll ask you one.
Okay.
Tell me about the Sinister House of Secret Love.
We've talked about that in the past.
I know, but I just sold it off. I just sold it as we're sitting here on off of eBay.
The first four issues were actually double size. They were a romance comic that was meant to kind of tap into the gothic romance boom at the time.
Ooh.
There was a lot of you know, the covers were women and castles, and they looked a lot like the romance novels of the early 70s. And the DC recently reprinted them in one of their showcases. And I'm not a romance comic person, but they had these
that's
Filipino
not true.
Artists.
You buy Weird Love.
Well, that's kind of different.
Maybe, maybe not.
Okay, and I do buy the Kirby romance.
Yeah, see, I knew we'd get you to confess.
But they brought in these Filipino artists, which was a new art style for American readers. And one of the reasons they brought them in is kind of like DC's new talent initiative now. Hey, we're paying the guys who are drawing comics now $50-$60 a page, and these Filipino artists will take $5 or $6 a page. Yeah, let's have them draw the comics. And a lot of them were brought in by inker Tony DeZungia, who was Filipino, but they had a very different art style. It was the inking was very light. The backgrounds were almost surrealistic and more sort of an impression of a tree rather than a drawing of a tree. It was it's hard to explain without seeing it. But in some ways, when you think Asian comics, you think manga, which is a style that everybody thinks of when they think of a comic from Asia. But the Filipino comics were very different, almost European in a way. So I picked up that showcase, and they're just, while the stories are very slow and boring, the art is reprinted in black and white, and it's, you know, on the pulpy paper, so it's not as good as it could be, but it's just a beautiful artwork to look at. And it's one of those things, I know when Jin talks about comics, she talks about how she doesn't read the story, she looks at the art. For those stories, I found myself just looking at the art and then going back and trying to follow the story. Eventually the book became The Sinister House. And I forget all the different titles it had. It changed titles a few times. And it became kind of another DC horror anthology. But those first four issues were just really beautiful stuff with painted covers. And they really went all out for them.
Almost got your voice to die that time.
Yeah, it's nearing the end here, kids. So that means it's time for Freaking and Geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
My war against Windows 10 goes on. Actually, it's we're getting to an easy impasse. I'm getting the hang of it. I'm trying to figure out where everything's going. The biggest problem I have is that most of the devices I use when I do Solo Joe podcasting and things like that, none of those devices have upgraded to Windows 10 drivers. And I've already, you know, I complained last week about my favorite scanner, which is perfectly fine if you're using Windows 7, doesn't work for Windows 10. My printer is able to work as a scanner, but it's not it doesn't do as much as the other scanner did. So I keep running into that problem. And I don't feel like going and buying, you know, hundreds of dollars of new devices just to do what I was previously able to do on Windows 7. I think what I'll probably end up doing is when I do the podcast and that, I'll either use my old computer, pray to God it doesn't crash, or I could use my daughter's computer because she's still working on Windows 7 and hers apparently works fine. But that's pretty much, I already talked about my neck. It's just stiff as heck. I don't know what the hell is going on. I mean, it can't turn left, can't turn right. So I just go forward, not backwards. Sideways, not backwards. And twirling, always twirling, 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 twirling. Jen, what are you freaking on?
I don't really have anything. Sorry, I'm not feeling well.
That itself is freakable.
Yeah. Corey, what are you freaking on?
I could tell a hanging at the home, but I think we will save that for next week because we're already in an hour and 20 minutes.
That's awfully shitty of you.
Oh, God. You're a horrible person,
it's
Joe.
Been noted.
Looking at the DC Rebirth, there are going to be three different Superman comics with three different Supermen. One is the pre-52 Superman who's married to Lois Lane. One is the Flashpoint, New 52, whatever Superman, and the other is a Asian Superman. And all I could think is, why can't you just tell Superman stories? Do we have to have all these different Supermen? It's like with Spider-Man. There are all these Spider-Man spinoffs. You've got Peter Parker as Spider-Man. You got Miles Morales as Spider-Man. You've got somebody doing Spider-Man stories set during the Ditko stories, and they're not anywhere near as good as Untold Tales of Spider-Man because they don't care about the continuity. You got Spider-Gwen, you got Silk, you got Spider-Woman. It's too much. It's just too much. Why not just create new characters rather than keep spinning off and spinning off? And yes, I know the spinoffs sell better than a new character does. But the fact that there are now two Spider-Men in the Marvel Universe is, I think it makes for confusion down the line. If you're going to have Miles Morales, who I think is a good character, he should have gotten a different name. But now you have two characters named Spider-Man. Yeah. And it's very nerdy and very geeky, but that's what the show's about. Joe, what are you geeking on?
Corey, have you ever heard of this series called Star Child?
Yes, I have.
James A. Owens, it was a self-published venture, started in 92, finished around 95. He's a fantasy illustrator, and Star Child's a fantasy in the style of Tolkien, set in a magic world of gnomes, magic, and monsters, some which are human. Now, I bought me a hardcover of his book, and I will crack it open to page one, where there is a very nice, what do you call it when you put something extra in the book? Says
frontispiece.
Says from the personal library of Will Eisner.
Oh, wow.
And on page two, it says, "To Will Eisner, with respect and admiration, James A. Owens, 1997.
Now, is that Will Eisner's copy, or did he just put that in all of them?
No, it was Will Eisner's copy, because what happened...
Holy cats!
...is the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, through their eBay site, was auctioning off parts of Will Eisner's personal library. All the books they had came from the late, great Will Eisner's personal libraries. Many books from this collection were bookplated. That's what I wanted to say. Then the bookplate has Will Eisner's own specially created personalized bookplate featuring the Spirit. Most were signed to Will Eisner, and they were definitely one of a kind. And the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund spent the better part of February and into March auctioning off just all sorts of things. I mean, my heart still breaks. There was a Michael T. Gilbert complete Wraith signed and numbered leatherette hardcover from this library that I got outbid on. But I was able to score Star Child, and which is cool because it's one of those books that when I had my shop, I made sure I always had copies of the comic in the store, and I forget how many there were. And I had the hardcover, I had the signed limited hardcover, I had his books. I don't have any now, but now I have one from the Master's Library himself, so I'm real happy about that. I figured that took up my geeking quota. Jin, you got anything you're geeking on?
No, not really, sorry. I've been reading, what is it, The Plot by Will Eisner, but I keep having people talk to me when I'm trying to read, so... Taking me a while. I know. Jeez. I'm popular. Corey, what are you geeking on?
First off, there is a new podcast that I think Joe may want to start listening to. It is The West Wing Weekly. It is a new podcast featuring Joshua Malina, who is actually an actor on The West Wing, and Hirakesh Hirway, who's a musician and composer and a political news junkie, and they are going to go through every episode of The West Wing, doing a new episode every week, talking about it, kind of, you know, going over what they liked about it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he has said that he's going to be getting some of the actors from the West Wing on. He's been bothering them a lot to come on the podcast. The first episode is out. You could go to thewestwingweekly.com to download it, and then you can subscribe on the iTunes and the Stitcher and the Overcast and the Pocket Cast. But for me, it's good because the West Wing is by my favorite screenwriter in the world, Aaron Sorkin, and it's a good excuse for me to go back and kind of do a rewatch on the show. And again, when it gets to the end of season four, I know Joe and I have discussed this, I don't know if I will continue, because I remember when it went from season four to season five, Aaron Sorkin was no longer involved, and a lot of what I loved about the show went away with him. And I don't know, maybe I will feel differently about it now that it's so far removed from Sorkin leaving. But very excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. The other thing, this is wrestling related. Joe, you don't watch a lot of New Japan Pro Wrestling, but one of the most charismatic and entertaining guys in New Japan is Nakamura. Nakamura has been signed by the WWE, and he will be debuting on NXT TakeOver the Friday before WrestleMania. And I just hope the WWE does not screw it up, because Nakamura is one of those guys who, even if you don't understand anything he's saying, he's so entertaining and so charismatic that you cannot help to watch. He has that level of charisma of, like, the Great Muda or Jushin Thunder Liger without the elaborate costuming, and his wrestling is a very different style. And I will be interested to see if they're able to integrate him into NXT. But one of the things about NXT is they're able to bring people in who aren't WWE types, and they do very well there. Samoa Joe has been really good there. When Kevin Steen was there, he was really good. And as much as everybody's excited about WrestleMania, I'm far more excited about NXT TakeOver on Friday night. And then the last geeking I have is a comic-related geeking. Joe, you mentioned Will Eisner, and one of the things that Jin has asked, she's asked me to kind of be her Sherpa into the world of comics. And a lot of people say that Will Eisner was the first graphic novelist, and I have always kind of wanted to dig into the idea of the graphic novel. In 1950, one of the comic book publishers, who is also a book publisher, attempted a kind of hybrid between the two. Crime novels and detective novels were really big in the late 40s, early 50s, even into the 60s, and I'm a huge fan of that genre. If I'm at a rummage sale or an estate sale or something, and somebody's got a whole bunch of those Fawcett or, you know, the Ace doubles for those just the throwaway crime novels that you would read in an afternoon, I'm going to pick them up. It's the kind of stuff that Hard Case Crime publishes. There was a comic put out written by Arnold Drake, who went on to work for DC, drawn by Matt Baker, who's best known as one of the original Good Girl artists of the 40s and 50s, called It Rhymes with Lust. And it was kind of a graphic novel, but it was a comic that was published like a trade paperback. And it went about 90 to 100 and some pages. And about 5 or 6 years ago, Dark Horse reprinted it in the original size that it came out. And as I was moving things around, I rediscovered my copy of it. I haven't had a lot of time for comics reading, but I sat and I read it. And one of the things that I liked was, this wasn't a comic book, and it was very clear this wasn't for kids. This was aimed at the kind of people who would pick up a Mickey Spillane book, or a John McDonald book, or one of the Parker books. It's very much aimed at the people who like that sort of stuff. It's a really good crime story. Matt Baker toned down his successes because he was one of those guys who drew. They were called headlight comics, and the reason for that is all the women had huge boobs that were drawn pointing right out at you. And he brought that down and drew it much more realistically. And it was a really, just a good, gritty crime novel. And I know it's still available at Amazon, and your comic shop might be able to still order it because Dark Horse still has it in print. But it's a graphic novel called It Rhymes with Lust. And if you like crime stories and you want to read kind of the evolution of graphic novels, this is one of the earliest things to start with. And as my voice is turning into a croak, I would like to thank everybody for listening.
Yeah, this
and
is
I
a
like
tough
this.
One. I mean, Jin's tired. I'm injured. You're sick.
But we powered through.
It's a GIMP episode.
It is.
Bring out the GIMP.
Bring out the GIMP.
But as we say every week, kids, the comics we like the least, we still like better than the comics that you like the most. Joe?
When you clean out a vacuum cleaner, you become a vacuum cleaner. Jin?
What? Oh, hit my music, boys.
We're going to dance. We're going to dance. We're going to dance. And have some fun.
Dig!